You're with the Spirit of Things on ABC Radio National, which of course is available as a podcast. Just go to abc.net.au/religion to find out how to do it.
When I awake, my dreaming starts. I dream about heaven and luminous beings. I dream I'm in it with my eyes closed. I dream I'm in it with my eyes open.
Mairead Sullivan is one of Australia's Celtic treasures, a voice like a trilling bird. She's also a songwriter of rare talent and now a filmmaker. Time After Time is an extended hymn to nature and Indigenous traditions across three continents. It's been selected for many international film festivals, and it's just been awarded Best Documentary Film at the International Panorama of Independent Film, held in Athens. Songs and words of wisdom weave through the film, like this excerpt from the historic speech by one of America's native sons, Chief Seattle.
We have taught our children, the earth is our mother. Whatever befalls the earth, befalls the sons of earth. This we know. The earth does not belong to man. The man belongs to earth. Are connected like the blood which unites our family. All things are connected. Whatever befalls the earth befalls the sons of earth.
Mairead Sullivan, welcome to the Spirit of Things.
Thank you so much for having me, Rachel.
Mairead, you're well known as a singer, especially of Celtic folk songs. When did you become a filmmaker?
About 4 years ago, actually. More than that, about 7 years ago, I discovered binoculars and got addicted to seeing things magnified. And the binoculars were very heavy. So we bought a film camera, because I wanted to capture the scenes of nature that we often went out to visit, because we have a habit of going out at dawn to land in beautiful wilderness places. That's when we got the camera and the tripod that meant that I didn't have to hold heavy binoculars, and then we just pressed record, and there we had it.
Well, your film, Time After Time, certainly is evocation and elegy to nature and to the earth, but it starts out with that famous shot of the earth from the Apollo spacecraft in 1972. Do you think that was a turning point in the way we understood the earth and our lives on the earth?
I think so, and I think it'll take a long time before we realize what an impact that has had on us. That was the very first time that human beings saw the earth in the same way that they see the moon or the sun up in the sky. And we're used to seeing the sun and the moon as multifaceted servers of our every need, the photosynthesis through the warmth and etc. But we still don't know what the earth is doing in the universe, what the purpose of it is. So it puts us back to our deep questions of purpose, sense of purpose, I think.
Is that what motivated you to make this film, to sort of find out what is the purpose of the earth and our lives on it?
Well, I've been asking that question since I was a very little girl, and I'm finding every tool I can to help me never stop asking those questions. Basically, that's what it's all about. It's about finding ways to keep that wonder and that questioning alive in my own life. through every medium that I can, whether it's singing a song or whether it's trying to write a poem, trying to capture thoughts and words, or then the most magical of things, actually seeing it in images. And I like to paint watercolors, and Ben, my partner, is an oil painter, and he loves large canvases. And so for both of us, it was just like being children again, having this ability to edit film. And also the fact that we're musicians and that we're used to working with multi-tracking of instruments, we feel that was a very important part in our contribution to this film, because mm-hmm. we brought all sorts of layering in to the film, and that's a little bit unusual in film.
Well, that layering in the film includes quite a strong theme of indigenous traditions. What made you choose the three that you focused on?
The answer must come from the soles of my feet. Because I have such really strong, I call them indigenous memories of my childhood on the farm, on the hill where we grew up in Ireland. And my whole visceral reality is bound up in that long-term memory. In 1991, I became what my former producer called a Mel born-again Celt. When I discovered that there was such a thing as ancient Celtic history, I didn't know about that before. I studied American history and I studied Chinese history, but I didn't know about the ancient Celts. And the thing that absolutely blew me off my chair was a couple of concepts. Anam Cara, it means soul friend. And I've grown up in a generation that's always looking for soul mates. Well, it was so liberating to think that everybody can be a soul friend instead of the exclusive nature of a soul mate. It was much better for me to contemplate what soul friendship was. And then I spent years analyzing that. And I came to understand it in using Irish dance, traditional Irish dance, and comparing it to yoga or Tai Chi. And slow down. It's in the tradition of body consciousness, because if you are very still and make yourself light, like in Irish dancing, you're leaping up into the air and you barely touch down before you're leaping up again. So you're actually aiming for levitation, so that you can feel the lightness of your body and then focus on the energy around your body. And so Anam Cara then, to me, is the meeting of two people who are very in touch with their bodies and the energy around their bodies and within themselves. And when they come to meet, you can actually perceive the meeting before you touch, in the etheric body, if you like, that extends around us, the energy that extends around us. So you have that interaction between people that's so visceral and so meaningful and has got nothing to do with controlling each other. It gives complete freedom. And that's Anam Cara, soul friendship.
And that plays quite an important part in the film. The first part of the film actually focuses on the Irish Celtic tradition, but then it moves into America with the Native
yes.
Americans.
Yes. Well, my partner, Ben, is of Scottish Cherokee tradition, and his great-great ancestor, Flora White, who came from Scotland in 1663 with seven sons. She was a lawyer, and she moved into North Carolina 1 year after that territory was opened up, inverted commas, by a very feudal system. But they were Quakers, and they escaped Scotland because of the religious persecutions. So having moved into the new territory and living amongst the Cherokees, and of course coming from that peaceful tradition, they brought that and engaged with the native people in that same serious, beautiful tradition that the Quakers have. They don't impose a dogma. They wait for inspiration, and they meet each other with that very same ancient respect that I found in the ancient Celtic roots. So you have two realities in America. You have the meeting of people who have profound respect for life and the wonder of the magnitude of infinity and infinite intelligence. And then you have the other side of it, which is the feudal structures that bind and oppress. And of course, there is the vastness of America. You know, Ireland is such a tiny little place. It's only 300 miles long and 200 miles wide, and it's very moist. And so everything, the mountains seem close in that moist air, whereas in America and in Australia too, the distances are vast, and of course the continents are vast.
Australia is where you also focus on the third indigenous tradition, the Aboriginal people. Mm. So you have that continuity through the film.
Well, I'm very aware of the wonderful reality that nowhere else on the planet do we have living links to ancient mythologies that the Aboriginal people still visualize in their dreaming, in their personal dreamings. Donnie Walaguja, whose paintings are featured in our film, in the Australian section, he's from the Kimberleys area. He talks about the Wanginas. Those are the painted rocks in the Kimberleys areas. And he's taken on the job of repainting those, that he feels that that's the job of every generation, is to maintain the link with the ancient cultures. And he says that they have to be looked at, and the spirit is in them. He even says that if white people had a Wangina, I love this quote from him, that they should look at it because the spirit is in there. And, you know, we do have Wanginas. We have beautiful sacred images all the way through our heritage. And they're still giving us the energy that they've come with from their original meaning. So we have an opportunity to immerse ourselves in the wisdom and the beauty of our ancestors. It's still alive. And it comes through the poetry and the songs.
Speaking of songs, your music weaves through the film time after time. And your song, Color Me, mm-hmm. actually draws that out. It's a beautiful juxtaposition.
I wrote that song in tandem with Steve Wilson here in Melbourne back in 1992, just after I began to write songs. And my first song was called Dreaming the Dreaming. And in order to get myself to be able to put words down for the first time in my life, I had to go deep into memory. And knowing what I knew then of the Aboriginal culture helped me to trace my lineage deep into history. I love the urban life. I love being close to people. But I think we have to bond with nature, and it really helps us if we do.
Color me by the river and the water of the deep blue sea. It's just me breaking down the walls upon the shifting sand.
The song Color Me by my guest Mairead Sullivan, who together with her partner, musician and composer Ben Kettlewell, produced the film Time After Time. The excerpt of Chief Seattle's speech, which we heard earlier, was read by Ben Kettlewell, who is himself of Native American Cherokee heritage. You're listening to Inspired by Nature on the Spirit of Things, here on ABC Radio National. The colors of the continents are so different. Australia is so bright, Ireland is so green and wet, and America has this sort of sepia brown color that has a lot to do with the portraits you show of the Native Americans. They were especially beautiful, and Chief Seattle figures pretty prominently there, as well as his speech, which is quite well known. What does his speech mean to you?
It shows to me that he saw the newcomers as not having a heart. The city of Seattle, Washington, was named after Chief Seattle. He's from the Puget Sound of Washington State. And those CPA pictures you saw were taken by Edward Curtis. He gave his life, 30 years of his life, from 1900 to 1930, photographing the Western United States, just as at the time when the culture was being overridden by the Eastern American gold rush and the population rush to take land in the West. And he was a great leader amongst his people. He was known throughout the West Coast amongst his people. But his speech is now known universally, and he spoke to the white man. He tried to appeal to the heart of the white man. He wanted them to understand that his people, his laughing children, the young happy maidens, whose pictures you see in the film, they're just beautiful people who live a bright life and a beautiful culture, and they're suddenly being taken over by a virus of a new culture that has no pity on them and no interest in their humanity, and is just ready to wipe them out for the sake of taking over their lands. And that's basically what he's up against.
I think he says in the film something like, much trouble and death would be avoided if we opened our hearts more.
Love, that's right.
Love your life, he says. Beautify all things in your life.
So perfect. That's what we should be doing.
Well, it's interesting, too, that the Aboriginal elder who is quoted in mm-hmm. the film Time
Bobby Benangar,
he says, two people living together, black and white, we are one red blood.
Yes.
How important is that message for you, that mixing up of peoples?
Well, bringing us right back to your original question of how do we see ourselves in the universe, our borders and our nationalities mean nothing to us. We are humanity, all of us. And it's a miracle that we are able to understand each other from ancient cultures that are so diverse. We meet in a multicultural context, and we have the same human heart, and we have the same red blood, and we have the same everything except the color of our skin, which is so superficial. And, you know, we should just get on with the joy that is our inheritance. You know, the ancient Irish, I actually had a major epiphany in Ireland. And one of the reasons why I go back and forth through all these cultures, because that's how it is in my mind. I put my forehead to a rock in the great stone circle of Grange up in Loch Ger, in Limerick, just near Tipperary border. And I had a major epiphany when I saw, and this was in the daytime when we were filming in there, I saw a nighttime scene of people in front of me, and on my right shoulder facing me, but looking up at the moonlight, was a face. I don't know whether it was a man or woman, but I could read their mind psychically. And this person was saying that he would passionately live to see the day when human beings would embrace their heritage of joy. So, you know, even the rocks speak.
Well, that's exactly what you managed to do in Time After Time. You've woven together three very different indigenous traditions from three different continents, and yet they sort of all melt in together. They all speak to each other. There's a consciousness that is shared.
Yeah, there's a delight. You know, that raw delight that human beings have when they're happy and they're not being oppressed by anybody.
Now, does this have something to do with the fact that you're a singer?
Well, you know, I believe that the best education a child can have is to rote learn, and to learn a song is one of the best trainings for the mind. Because when you memorize poetry or songs, you can forget about the words and you can allow the meaning of the song to come through you. And that takes you into a deeper space, which is timeless and it's got nothing to do with place.
Well, the Irish have some great songs. You
yes.
sing the Great Silky of Sul Skerry, a song that I used to sing since my childhood.
Oh, yes. That's a great song.
Oh, it's full of mythical
it
allusions.
Is. And what about that line when she tells the Silky off or begetting a child by her, when she says that he ought not to have done this to her. That means that she thought that him conceiving a baby with her was without meaning. Isn't that fascinating?
Yes, because the Silky is a seal. He comes up
yes.
from the deep, and when he's on land, he becomes a man.
Shapeshifter.
A shapeshifter.
Yeah, it definitely is referring to that view that people had in the Western Islands, that the animals have life. I mean, gee, that's actually quite an interesting thing to talk about, you know, because you look around at any animal today and you can, if you look at it long enough and carefully enough, you see it has a being. And so, of course, those people who live with those seals and sea creatures, they looked out to the west and there was Tiernanog, the land of eternal life. And the spirits came and went. They were able to move through dimensions. You know, we began to, through quantum physics, we began to realize that idea of multiple dimensions is tangible.
There's also, I think, a connection here in that all three Aboriginal traditions have a profound relationship to the natural world, to the animal world.
Well, yes. Anybody who works in a garden or has been raised in the country knows how they're imbued with the spirit of the ground they work in. And they love it. Now, that's the thing. You know, you look up at the full moon and you look at it long enough, you're just filled with love for it. And, you know, I think that love is, that's where love grew. I think love grows out of respect and wonder. And it's with our environment, it's with the land. Remembering that is a good thing because we'll take care of that which we love.
Do you hope your film will instill this reverence or reconnect human beings to nature?
Yeah, I do. I hope that it'll make people feel that lovely softness, that big-hearted feeling of joy and thankfulness for the life we have and the wonder at all the mysteries we're facing with daily.
Well, there's certainly some whimsy in the film and in your life, I suppose, with the Irish beliefs in fairies.
I wanted to show that multidimensional nature of nature. And I looked through all my libraries and I looked through friends' libraries. And one day, of course, you find something in the last place you look. Right there on my bookshelf was William Butler Yeats' 1892 publication of Myths and Rituals and I can't remember the name, but it was The Fairies and the Rituals of the Irish anyway. It's on my website, or on our website. And it was the introduction to the chapter on the trooping fairies. I read it, and it was just, oh my God, he said it perfectly. Yeats, the Magus of the 20th century, according to many people, he described perfectly the relationship between nature and humanity and the possible description. He describes how our lineage, the ancient Irish lineage, has been transformed into fairy stories, when in actual fact they are the gods, the pantheon of gods of the ancestors of the Celtic and Irish people, all the Celtic people of the Western European area. They've now become diminutive and little fairies of a few spans high, you know.
Well, I must say I learned a lot about fairies in the film.
Well, that's good.
Now, your film ends as it began, in the heavens, with some of the most beautiful shots of the Milky Way and of nebula, the moon, the stars. The words of the song that you sing at the end reminded me a bit of the Song of Solomon, which is read as a love poem to another human being as well as
That's God. Exactly right. That song, I wrote that for Ben. It's my love song to Ben. And it's to the universe. Not a word needs to be changed. You know, when you love people like that, it's universal, it's infinite, it's unending. It is all-embracing.
Well, Mairead, may the fairies watch over you.
And you, Rachel. Thank you so much. Lovely to talk with you.
Mairead Sullivan was my guest today. She's well known as a singer and is now a filmmaker. Time After Time has just won an International Film Award for Best Documentary Film. And to find out more about it, just go to her website, lyrebirdmedia.com. The details will also be on our website at abc.net.au/religion and follow the prompts to the Spirit of Things. And while you're there, find out how you can hear the program as an MP3 download or a podcast. It's also available online for 4 weeks. I hope you enjoyed this week's Change of Pace on the Spirit of Things. It was produced by none other than Jeff Wood and myself, with technical production by Angus Kingston. Next week, we delve the sacred scriptures for a new age, the eclectic collection of inspired writings that have topped bestseller lists, And my special guest is James Redfield, the author of The Celestine Prophecy. Don't miss this rare interview. That's next week on The Spirit of Things with me, Rachel Kahn.
That in your eyes I see precious love, sweet darling, dance with me forever. We will never drift apart. Inform me now, my destiny, this embrace.
ABC Radio National. More than 60 programs broadcast on more than 260 transmitters. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Live streaming on the net as well as media on demand streams. Find out how to get more out of Radio National. Go to abc.net.au/rn. And for the full list of MP3 and podcast programs, abc.net.au/rn/podcasts.